All right, so welcome everybody to this very first interview with TimelessTriathlon.com. Today we've got Ben Greenfield with us. Now, if you have been on the internet at all looking for information about triathlons, then it's quite likely that you've come across Ben Greenfield. He's on almost every website you go to, all the important ones anyway, and he's just an incredible wealth of knowledge about triathlon. So I thought I'd let Ben introduce himself. Ben, you've written a lot of books. You're all over the internet, and you've got an incredible knowledge about nutrition, fitness, and specifically triathlon. Just tell us a bit about yourself. What's your background, and how did you get into triathlon?
Well, I'm technically trained as an exercise physiologist, and I have my degree in human biomechanics and physiology and sports nutrition, and have been or did study that stuff for 5 years at university. And then during that time, I was doing a lot of coaching, a lot of training for athletes of all levels, from professional athletes all the way down to recreational athletes, mostly in team sports like football and volleyball and basketball and things of that nature. And started kind of working more with endurance athletes and doing more endurance athletics myself, just as I kind of got into the stage where I was doing more on my own, participating less in collegiate sports, and kind of venturing out and trying new things. So exercise physiology is really, really fun to play with endurance sports because it's a sport of attrition. And so what that means is it's like if you go out and you play in a football game, you're probably not gonna run out of carbohydrates, but in a triathlon you probably will. And at the same time, you'll probably also run out of water and run out of electrolytes. And there's just so many more important variables to think about, from a pacing standpoint, from a fueling standpoint, and just from a management standpoint, that triathlon specifically ended up being a really, really fun sport for me to work with, and one that I ended up really liking to compete in and also study.
It sounds like you are really interested in all the sort of science behind the sport. So it's not just the fact that you do the training, but all of the different possible options and studies and things that go into it. Is something that sort of excited you about the sport too, is it?
Yeah, definitely.
And cool. And I've got a whole lot of questions from our listeners that we've compiled together, but I thought just at first it might be interesting just in general. Are there any, maybe what you might call myths or insights that you have to share with our subscribers who they may have heard certain things that may or may not be true, or some ideas which you might want to clarify that, are kind of common knowledge, but may you might know a little bit extra about it that can help people?
Yeah, sure. You mean like for Ironman triathlon or just like triathlon in general?
I think that of the subscribers that we've got, a lot of them have done Ironman, but there's also quite a few that, just do triathlon in general. So a bit of both, I guess.
Yeah, I'd say that there's definitely kind of like a training myth out there. Most people train too much. Like 99% of the people that I end up taking on to coach, or that I see out training, or here in my local training club, they just train too much. These are all the people who, like, they'll sit around at lunchtime and they'll be like, "Oh, I wish I had more time. I spend all my time training," and I'm sitting there, I'm like, I don't understand what these people are talking about. And they're like, "Ben, you must train all the time." I'm like, "No, I train, maybe 90 minutes a day or so." And if the quality of your training is sufficient and you're using a program that is scientific, meaning that it has you train hard when you're supposed to train hard and go easy when you're supposed to go easy, and throws in a few big workouts here and there that do take a few hours, then you really don't have to train that much day in and day out. Things like a high intensity interval training, weight training, plyometrics, these type of higher intensity activities tend to use a lot of the muscles that you'd use during endurance sports, but they recruit a lot more of those muscle fibers, and so they train the muscles a lot more quickly. So even though it may seem like running 400 meter repeats on a track is stupid, if you're going to go do a marathon or an Ironman or something, what you're training your body to do is recruit more muscles. And so when it's running at lower speeds, like at a marathon pace, it's actually able to run a lot more efficiently and a lot more economically. And so you're not really slowing down at mile 13 of the marathon in an Ironman triathlon the same way you would because of those track repeats. So doing quality training along with interval training and not training so much is huge. And it really is a myth that you have to train for whatever, 20 hours a week or 25 hours a week to kind of be ready for Ironman triathlon. And probably one of the other biggest myths I see is like the nutrition myth that you have to be eating all the time or that you have to be eating lots of carbohydrates. I'm to the point now where I eat 3, sometimes 4 times a day. And sometimes I'll go, 15, 17 hours without eating. And it's because of the nutrient density of the foods that I choose. And my avoidance of sugar, starches, and common carbohydrate sources that most athletes use. And the reason for that is that I've trained my body to basically be a fat-burning animal. And it's easy to do. It's not rocket science. You simply have to choose food groups that are incredibly nutrient-dense and wean your body off of the ones that aren't. And there's usually a couple weeks of kind of discomfort involved where you're craving carbohydrates. And, every time you walk past the donut shop, you want to, like, drop everything and go spend your entire paycheck. But if you make it through kind of the first little bit, or from, like, 7 to 14 days of discomfort, it really is a myth that you need to be, like, eating frequently or eating a ton or eating a lot of carbohydrates to really kind of be successful in the sport and have the energy to compete. And of course, when you're out there in the heat of competition, you do need carbohydrates. But if you train your body the right way and you train yourself to kind of be this fat-burning animal, your body ends up using the carbohydrates that you consume during the race a lot more efficiently.
Right, yeah, I've heard the buzzword metabolic efficiency. Is that what you're basically talking about there, that your body becomes good at burning fat? It doesn't need so much carbohydrate to keep it going.
Yeah, like metabolic efficiency, that's a term coined by Bob Sibahar, who's a sports nutritionist, and it's kind of more based on like doing lots of training in your fat burning zone without a lot of carbohydrates on board. So it certainly incorporates some of that philosophy. But I'm kind of talking a little bit more about like the macronutrient percentage of the foods that you eat, like eating basically like a lower carbohydrate, higher fat, moderate protein type of diet.
Okay. Well, it was good to clarify that. There's obviously an overlap there, but there's a slight distinction as well.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's great. So you've touched on two main ideas there as far as training and nutrition. So let's just go back to the training side of it for a little while, and then we'll talk a bit more about nutrition later on. Is that cool with you?
Yeah.
Cool. Now, with that training, the Arthur Lydiard's very famous coach. I'm from New Zealand, so, he's like a god over here. And as I understand it, his approach to training was, lots of long miles, don't do any sort of intervals or speed work until closer to the race. How would you comment about, that kind of idea with what you spoke earlier, that doing interval training can be a more time-efficient way of training?
Well, the Lydiard training protocol sometimes is a little bit misunderstood because he did tons of like hill training and sprint drills on top of a lot of that base work. One of the things that his program revolves around though is laying that aerobic foundation. So really not beating your body up too much with the speed work before you've actually laid down that foundation. And it's a basic philosophy that you're going to find in many triathlon training programs, this idea of base training and laying down a foundation. But the issue is that like most of them kind of continue to lay down base year round. And so you end up doing lots of long miles, kind of like the Lydiard philosophy, even as you're getting close to your race, or you know, in the time that you're supposed to be building and doing more intense kind of race pace, shorter efforts, you're still building. And it's the basic idea behind this is that people are afraid of losing their endurance. You know, like all of the long bike rides that you did back in, you know, December for a June race, you know, like in May, you're still doing all these long rides because you're afraid of losing your endurance. But that doesn't happen. You know, I've done my share of long, slow training. But, you know, for example, like I'm doing Ironman Hawaii here in, I don't know what it is, like 12 weeks. And I haven't even started training for that race at all. You know, no long bike rides, nothing like that, because I know my body has a bunch of endurance in it already from training that I did last year. So it takes, once you've laid down that aerobic base, and you can do that with as little as 8 to 12 weeks of, you know, kind of like that Lydiard style of aerobic training. It doesn't take that much to sustain it as long as you're doing high intensity training. So, or as long as you're racing, you know, one of the two, I would consider racing to be a form of high intensity training. So the trick is to use it, but not to use it all the time, and to trust that, that you're going to be very good at endurance. The human being is among the creatures that are on the face of the planet, one of the creatures that is more skilled at trekking for long distances, and we can do so naturally without a lot of training.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. And you've pointed out that the Lydiard approach is sometimes misunderstood, that there is actually like the hill bounding exercises, the plyometrics type of thing, that he did incorporate a lot of hills, even in his endurance runs. And as time went by, it seemed that he incorporated more hills than his earlier days, because he felt that strength training was beneficial.
Yeah.
And also I remember looking at his programs that the day after or a couple of days after the long run, he would incorporate like 200 meter wind sprints to make sure that you keep the speed in your legs as well as the endurance.
Yeah.
So it was interesting.
Yeah. And that's like that's one thing that annoys me, is like when I see people jogging away at a snail's pace, you know, like 4 weeks before their marathon, because they're training the Lydiard way. I'm like, you should have been doing that stuff like 8 months ago.
Yeah, definitely. Now, an interesting thing that you brought up is that your approach to training for the Ironman, like the traditional approach that most people pick up when they go over, look on the internet, is that you do your long training, and then as you get closer to your race, you do more intensity. But it sounds like in your training for the Ironman, your training is generally shorter and more intense, and as you're coming closer to this Ironman, that's when you'll do some of your longer training. Would that be right, or is that, did I misunderstand that?
Well, yeah, it's a great point that you bring up, because a lot of training programs are kind of written from the perspective that you know, you're taking an athlete who's starting from maybe a low level of fitness, you're bringing them up through this each step of fitness, and then ending at the race. But if you take a more advanced athlete, and I'm not a pro, I'm not anywhere near that fast, but I do have a lot of experience, and I'm usually in pretty good shape, and I haven't really lost fitness that I've developed having done 7 Ironman triathlons. So for me, you know, going out and doing an Ironman triathlon just involves kind of like removing some of the rust. And it doesn't involve like laying down the foundation, going through all the proper training again. So like my build up for Hawaii will involve, you know, for the next 4 weeks, I'll kind of be doing some hard bikes and hard runs and hard swims. And in the 11 weeks, I think it is, something like that, between now and the race, I'll probably get in 3 long bike rides where I'll go anywhere from 80 to 100 miles. I'll get in 3 good high quality 2 to maximum 2 hour and 20 minute runs that are really focused on running at a race pace or at a slightly quicker than race pace. And I will get in a couple of kind of harder, like steady 3K swims out in the open water. And other than that, I'll just do my normal training of just some hard swims, bikes, and runs thrown in during the week. So the actual endurance training will just be a few high-quality sessions. And frankly, because I'm a lifestyle athlete, I'm an age grouper, I'm not a pro. So a lot of times my training has to be arranged around my life, which is very important in your training program that you be able to do that if you're an age grouper triathlete. A lot of times the week between now and Hawaii, in which I do, say, like, you know, my 100-mile bike ride, it's not going to be on a week that I necessarily scientifically lay out as six, let's say, I'll say 4 weeks before the race. It might be 6 weeks before the race because my wife is going to drive 100 miles down to where her mom lives so the kids can see grandma, and I'm going to ride my bike down there and catch a ride home. You know, so a lot of times my workouts will be structured around what's kind of going on with life, so I can go spend time with my kids, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to fit things in. And, you know, I find that when I used to live a distance from school and I used to commute by bike, it just meant that my training happened because it was part of my lifestyle. It wasn't something I had to kind of add on.
Yep.
And vacations were always great because I got to do my long ride and I really enjoyed it. It was like an adventure as well.
Yeah.
I think one thing that you brought up is that you're talking about how you've got this fitness that you've built up over years. And I think the thing that I always emphasize in the tips that I send out is that consistency is the number one factor.
Absolutely.
Over a period of time, if you can consistently keep training, even if it's a bit long or a bit slow, or, you know, before you even start thinking about exactly what kind of training, if you're just doing some consistent training over time, that's going to really give you the most benefit of anything you can do.
Yeah, it's so true. And I really think that is one of the secrets of successful athletes is like, so, you know, like I was just talking about over on my blog, how I recently got sick and ended up in the ER due to kind of like this this infection that probably invaded my arm, like at the gym, because I'm always, you know, running through wilderness and playing too much and getting all these open wounds. And something got in through a scratch in my arm and infected my arm and just knocked me flat on my butt for about 3 days. Mm. And honestly, like lying around for 3 days, I can't tell you the last time I did that. It was probably like 8 years ago. I mean, you know, it's like I'm always doing something, and it's just a normal part of my life. I mean, even on a day when I get up and there's no, you know, scheduled exercise routine, you know, I'm still like I work at a standing workstation and I do yoga every morning for 10, 15 minutes. I mean, it's just like every day you do something.
Mm. Yeah, I've been doing that standing up, working on the computer. I found that helps a lot. I find that sitting down just turns my brain off, basically.
Yep.
So that's a good trick. But yeah, I was just wondering, like, just going back to your Ironman training, do you do any bricks, like a long run and a run off the bike, that kind of thing?
No, I don't like bricks because they're inconvenient. When I finish a workout, I'd rather just kind of be done. Like, I don't want to be at the end of a long bike ride and be thinking about having to run afterwards. So when I want to do a brick workout, honestly, I usually sign up for a race. But they are highly beneficial. That's a character flaw of mine that I don't do a lot of brick workouts because a lot of the athletes I coach do them. They're incredibly effective at building your fitness very quickly. And that's it really is fine. Like, if you don't like brick workouts, then it's fine to go sign up for a sprint triathlon and have that be your brick workout. And really, like, it's actually a good workout. This is a strategy I'll use when I'm training for Ironman, is I'll sign up for a sprint triathlon in a town that's like, you know, 30, 40, 50 miles away and catch a ride with somebody, do the race, and then ride home. And I mean, doing little things like that can really help to boost your fitness. But, you know, bricks certainly do have their place. I end up doing more kind of like mini bricks where, you know, like during lunchtime, I'll ride my bike to the gym and swim 20 minutes and then run 10 on the treadmill real quick and ride home. But I don't do a lot of like epic bricks, like big, long brick training days. Just primarily because I tend to use races for that.
Yeah. And once again, you're incorporating the lifestyle to, you know, make the training happen, which is very practical and good. And that's why I named the website Timeless Triathlon, because the idea is to try to get the best results without using up too much time.
I love it.
Yeah. Another thing with bricks I think people have to watch out for is those really long bricks where you do a long ride and a long run. I think, you know, if you do a long ride and do a short run at the end with a little bit of intensity, it's, you know, much more realistic and safer than trying to put two together like
that. Oh, yeah. The longest you should ever really run off the bike maximum would be an hour, especially like after a long ride. Going any longer than that, you're just beating yourself up.
Yeah.
Do not ever schedule like an hour and a half or like a half marathon off of a long bike. You know, probably about the only exception to that would be like if you're going to kind of do like a half Ironman-ish training session where you're riding your bike for, you know, 2 to maybe around 3 hours and then getting off and doing like a half marathon distance run. But don't go out and do like a 100-mile bike and then a 2-hour run. That's a tough training session.
Yep.
For training sessions like that, and this is the way I lay out my training program, is I'll have people ride long on like a Saturday, and then you get up Sunday morning and get your long run in on fatigued legs, but you don't do it right after the bike.
Yeah, sure. And I was just thinking, it sounds to me that the type of training that you do is quite standard, whether you're training for an Ironman or a you know, standard shorter course race. And it's just that when the Ironmans are coming up, you might do a few longer sessions to prepare yourself. Would that be right, that your training for both of them is quite similar?
Yeah, it is. It doesn't change at all, really, other than depending on what my work schedule is like, I'll either do the long run on Wednesday or I'll do a long run on the weekend. But yeah, all I really do is throw an extra one long run, one long bike, and one long swim in, and that's about all it really takes.
Cool. And we've got some subscribers that are, you know, a bit older, say, you know, 50, 60, even 60 plus. And then I've also got one young guy, Jordan, who's 17, and he wants to have a lifetime mission of doing really well at the Ironman in Hawaii.
Awesome.
When it's bigger. So have you got any suggestions for those that are younger as well as those that are older, and if there's any changes they should make to their training based on their age?
Yeah, if you are younger, you naturally have a lot of speed, you naturally have a high percentage of fast twitch muscle fiber, and you tend to have higher levels of hormones. Your hormones will start to decline. Well, for girls, really, you'll start to go into your pre-menopause, right around the age of about 28, 29. That freaks a lot of girls out, but that's really how early that your hormones start to get thrown off, and that's why you should be thinking about things like your bone density and the type of foods that you're eating, even when you're in your 20s. For guys, your testosterone will start to decline around the age of 27. But up until that point, you naturally have a lot of speed. And so sometimes it's more beneficial to focus on your skill and your efficiency of movement, because you haven't been doing the sport long enough to be very efficient at stuff. And also to focus a lot on kind of building that foundation of endurance. And if you're older, it's kind of the opposite scenario. You've already had your foundation of endurance. You've got a good percentage of fast twitch or slow twitch muscle. You've got a high mitochondrial density, mitochondria being the little organelles inside your cell that can really efficiently utilize oxygen for energy. And so for older individuals, the game becomes to maintain your fast twitch muscle, which you're going to end up losing at a very quickly rate, or a very, very fast rate as you age, to maintain your hormonal status with, you know, for example, for guys, support for testosterone, or for women, for example, support for like estrogen insensitivities, and also to focus on like speed, leg turnover, some of the other things that you tend to lose from a neuromuscular standpoint. So there's definitely different beasts to tame for the two different age groups.
It's interesting. And like going back to the Arthur Liddy approach, it seems like, you know, his training program was specifically designed, you know, for young people training to be champions. So the extra emphasis on endurance sort of makes sense then.
Yeah, that's a keen observation. And yeah, absolutely. I think it does make sense. And the other thing to remember, of course, is that nutrition may be different as well. Like, you know, when you age, you lose some of that hydrochloric acid in your stomach. You're not able to break down protein as well. You don't handle it quite as well as younger generations do. So, you know, your diet, might skew a little bit more towards higher fat intake as you age, which is also especially important as your, you know, as these little sheaths along your neurons degrade, and as your neurons in your brain begin to break down a little bit, your brain cells need a little bit more fuel. You know, higher fat diet as you age, and a little more protein as you're younger can certainly be something to consider as well.
And when you say fat, does that mean like more butter and more fried food, or you have something else in mind?
If you can get like an unsalted butter from a good dairy source, that's okay. Definitely like vegetable oils. You'd want to avoid fried oils, heavily heated oils, stuff like that. But you know, a good high fat, high quality dairy source, preferably from good healthy dairy, cows, goats, things like that. A good fatty fish, avocados, olives, some eggs, either duck eggs or chicken eggs. You could get like fattier cuts of beef, like a ribeye cut, for example. And coconuts are going to be a really good source as well. Extra virgin olive oil. Things of that nature.
What about chia seeds? That seems to be something quite popular. And flaxseed oil, those good sources as well?
Yeah, they're okay. I mean, you got to take in a lot of them to get a ton of fat. But they're... They're, you know, overall, they've got electrolytes, they've got minerals, they've got some fatty acids in them, a little bit of protein. You know, you can grind them up and mix them in a 1-9 ratio seed to water and make kind of a sludge and drink that during like a slow run. You mix a little lemon juice or stevia in with there, and you know, that's not a bad little fuel source. But you can also do things like, you know, sprinkle those on salads and snack mixes and things like that as well.
Yeah, I had a specific question about coconut oil. Is it good in general, or is there something to watch out with?
Yeah, you know, I'm actually using the oil specifically a little bit more right now because I'm on this antibiotic for this thing that attacked my arm, because coconut oil has some really good antifungal properties. When you take an antibiotic, it'll kill off a lot of good bacteria in your stomach, which then allows yeast like candida to grow. And so coconut oil can help with that. Oregano oil can help with that. Coconut oil is also a good source of medium chain triglycerides, which are burnt really well for fuel by your body during exercise. So you could you could use it in cooking, you know, with like a, you know, you could fry some eggs in coconut oil. Some people, for medicinal use will just eat it by the spoonful. It's certainly one of the oils that I cook with more often. It's very heat stable, so it doesn't form a lot of free radicals. It's not like, it doesn't have the highest smoking point of all oils, but it's better to cook with than like, you know, an olive oil or a flaxseed oil or something like that.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So we started to move a little bit into nutrition, but I've got a few specific training questions. So I might just read some from that subscribers have sent in. There's a question from Laura about training on a mountain bike. Is that good type of training, or is it not so specific in that sense?
You know, my mountain bike got stolen from my garage last year, and I'm just this week in the process of replacing it. So it's a timely question. When I get that mountain bike for myself, I'll be using it for hill workouts, not because the hill workouts are any more effective on a mountain bike, but it can certainly be more beautiful and more fun to get your hill climbing and your leg strength training in, when you're riding on trails and on hills. Of course, if you're going to do any Xterra type of triathlons, a mountain bike is good. I did my first triathlon using a mountain bike. Obviously, like for road cycling, you know, you don't want to use a mountain bike. I would not use one in a triathlon. I'd rent a road bike before I'd ride a mountain bike at this point. But for training, mountain bikes are really good for building strength in the legs and doing hill climbing. And because you're typically pedaling at a higher cadence, they're also really good for working on your pedal stroke efficiency.
Yeah, cool. Now, the next question is, how do you train for an event that's 60,000 feet above sea level? if you're on sea level itself, is there anything specific you can do to help with that?
Unless you have access to an altitude tent or an altitude chamber at which you could sleep to expose your body to the rigors of altitude, there's not a lot you can do aside from driving up to altitude and training at altitude. You can certainly, from a nutritional standpoint, make sure that you're eating foods that are higher in iron, you know, having sesame seeds and lots of dark leafy greens and, you know, red beef and salmon and mitochondrial rich meats and things of that nature. But ultimately for altitude, it's very, very difficult to do anything but train at altitude to simulate altitude. You know, you're going to lose more water, so you need to be prepared to drink more up there. You would ideally, you should get there. Really, to be honest, most people don't like to hear this, but it should be 2 weeks before your actual your training takes place. And you know, I'd like to say that all of these supplements like cortigen and rhodiola and ginkgo biloba and all these things that people are taking, you know, when they're up there on, you know, Mount Everest, are going to be things that will help get you ready for altitude when you're at sea level or at lower altitudes. But the fact is, they're not even going to make a dent in the way you're going to feel. once you're up there, they'll help. But I mean, you know, loading up with them in your body or something like that before that point probably isn't really going to make much of a difference.
Right. Okay. Now it seems from the, we've got a whole bunch of questions, which was really great. I'm just summarizing some of them now. It seems that there's quite a few people that are a bit frustrated with the Ironman swim, and they're wondering if there are any tricks how they can improve that. And a lot of people seem to think that it's maybe a lack of strength that's holding them back. Any suggestions?
You ever seen Alistair Brownlee?
Yeah, isn't he that guy on the cover of Iron Man magazine, you know, with his big muscles in it?
No.
Not at all, right?
He's not a strong dude. He's not a strong looking dude. He's very strong of mind and character, but it's not strength that holds you back in the water.
And he comes out of the water first in a lot of those races too, which is another point, isn't it?
Yeah, many of them. He's one of the best swimmers out there. Javier Gomez is up there too. You know, none of these ITU guys are big. It's a mix. It's, first of all, arm turnover is really important. So working on fast cadence, because you really got to be churning some serious water for that first 200 to 300 meter portion of the swim. And, that's going to help mentally, knowing that the first few hundred meters are going to hurt. It would be nice if everybody kind of, realize from the beginning that it was a long swim and pace themselves, but it's a combination of egotistical kind of front pack triathletes who know how to pace, just wanting to be the first one to the turnaround buoy, mixed with people who don't know how to pace, thinking they can swim that fast for the whole triathlon. And so it just ends up turning the whole race into a free for all at the beginning, that the only way to avoid is to just not get in the water. And wait until everybody's gone and then get in and swim. So you need to train your arm turnover to be ready for those high speeds from the beginning. You need to be of the mental mindset before the race that you are ready for just about anything. And you have to let that kind of go off, feel like water off a duck's back. And a lot of times that really can be the difference between enjoying the swim and not enjoying it, is accepting the fact and being ready for the fact that you will not have your own swim. You will swim with, you know, especially in an Ironman, a crowd of people almost the entire time, kicking you, passing you, getting in your way. And, you know, I think of it, honestly, it's, for me, it's more like a video game. It's like when you play these video games where you're passing cars and dodging, you know, rocks and missiles are getting shot at you. It's like, for me, it's just, you know, it's hard and you're working, but it's just a game. I mean, it's an obstacle course and you're just trying to stay as aware as possible and kind of weave your way through. So, you know, it's all about the mindset with which you approach it. And, you know, you can certainly work on your speed and your turnover. And as the race gets closer, do lots of fast 50s and 25s and 100 meter repeats, and don't do a lot of like long, slow swimming. But, you know, ultimately it's going to be like that. So just be ready for it and get to enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. It's fun having that, having those battles in the water.
Yeah.
I just had also a question, like when I started to get back into training after like a 20-year break, I was looking at the training guidance and it was mostly based around really long strokes, you know, like Ian Thorpe or Grant Hackett, where they really glide type of thing. But then you look at someone like Janet Evans and her turnovers, like really fast and sort of it seems like a shorter type of a stroke. Is a different stroke suitable for different people?
To a certain extent. I mean, like Grant and Ian are still, I mean, they're so efficient at pulling so much water that for them to take a long stroke, if you look at the distance traveled per stroke, that's enormous. If you look at the distance traveled per stroke for the average person focusing on a long stroke, because they're not grabbing as much water early in the stroke with their catch, they're not pulling through at the high elbow, so they're not exposing as much surface area to the water, they're not traveling very far per stroke. And so, you know, the long gliding stroke just doesn't make sense. The more efficient you are in the water, the lower your stroke count is going to become because the more efficient each pull gets. But your cadence is still going to be higher than you think it should be. And if you go to YouTube and pull up a, you know, an ITU triathlon swim and look at the cadence on these guys, it's through the roof. I mean, they're doing a lot of strokes, and especially when you get in the open water and you're fighting chop and lots of changes of direction, similar to road cycling, where you're always having a higher cadence to be able to respond to changes in pace and changes in terrain. And open water swimming and triathlon swimming and pack swimming is very much like that, whereas a higher cadence is going to allow you to be a more adaptive swimmer. That being said, certainly people with longer, taller bodies, or people who are incredibly efficient in the water are going to be able to get away with lower stroke count or a longer gliding stroke, whereas shorter people may not be that way. But there's certainly, I would hate to say that, you know, short people should windmill and long people should glide, because that's really not the case. I mean, if you're a short person and you have a very efficient swim stroke, then you can get away with, you know, kind of this slightly longer gliding pattern. So, it kind of depends, but I can tell you that any open water swimmer is going to have a higher cadence than a pool swimmer, no matter what.
Yeah. Okay, great. And then just the next question is the other end of the Ironman is that, you know, the big challenge in the Ironman is being able to keep going on the run. And again, there seems to be some, ideas that core training can be helpful to, you know, help you maintain, or are there other things that we really need to focus on to help you get through that longer run at the end of the Ironman?
Core training will help a little bit, but I don't want to tell you how many awesomely fit guys with six packs and chicks who just look, you know, they've got fabulous bodies, just putting out these fantastic times on the bike, and they're walking by mile 13 of the run. It's not because they don't have the core strength to support them on the run, or the, you know, they don't have strong hips or strong legs. It's because they bike too hard. That 9 times out of 10, that's what the problem is. I mean, a core strength isn't going to help you at all if you're simply biking outside of your maximum aerobic efficiency zone on the bike. Like in my triathlon program that you talk about over at Timeless Training, you do a lot of bike rides where you're just focusing on maintaining a heart rate that you're tested during the program to find, and that heart rate is your maximum aerobic efficiency, and that's the one that allows you to run really fast off the bike. So, core strength is going to help you. It's going to allow for a little bit better, you know, economy of motion, etc. But again, most of the core training studies, you know, kind of like taking supplements for altitude training, it's like it's going to get you that extra, you know, 3%, 5%. It's not going to stop you from hitting a wall and walking in the half marathon because you went too hard on the bike or because you fueled the wrong way. It's I would say it's more for like injury prevention. That's the type of thing that's going to help you out with than it is anything else. Like I did 2008 Ironman Coeur d'Alene. I did that, and about mile 13, my IT bands were just killing me, and the outside of my hips were just killing me. And one of the reasons for this is I did very, very little glute strengthening work leading into that race, much less than I usually do. And I was the top age grouper in that race, and it cost me the age group win. I got passed several times in that last half marathon, just because I had to slow my stride so much and stop at a few aid stations to stretch, because weak glutes and weak hips cause my IT bands to tighten up. So, it certainly can slow you down a little bit, but even that, that slowed me down like 5%. It's not like it stopped the race. If I would have biked too hard, I would have been walking.
Right, right. Actually, I can recommend a good book on IT band problems. It's by a guy called Ben Greenfield. You might find it on bengreenfieldfitness.com. It's a good one, that one. I've recommended that to the list previously because a few people had IT band problems, and I also suffered from that when I was a kid. And I haven't suffered from it lately, but yeah, it's definitely good advice in that book, and just sort of throw that out there.
Yeah, I wrote that book probably almost a year and a half after that scenario I just described to you, because that scenario, I should have identified at the time that if my IT bands were tightening after weak glute strength, that maybe there were some underlying issues that I should have addressed that I didn't. And my IT band ended up turning into a much more serious issue the following year. And it was after going through a fiasco with that I wrote the Bulletproof Knee book.
Right. Yeah. No, that's good. I can see we're getting a little short on time now. It's really great stuff that you're sharing with us. We just had a couple of questions about nutrition, and maybe we can just do it in general.
Sure.
We'll start with race day nutrition first of all. What are the general recommendations, like when you should start taking nutrition? Is caffeine good? Those are the two main kind of questions that are coming up.
What was the first one?
When should you start taking the nutrition and how much? Like, should you start eating as soon as you get out of the water, or should you take a little time before you start, taking your gels and things?
Eat early and eat often in Ironman. You're not going to want to eat towards the end of the day. You're just not going to want to. And early in the day, you're also not really going to want to eat because there's a lot going on. Kind of in the middle of the race, you tend to remember to eat a little bit. That's the classic scenario. And so you get people going out, going hard, kind of starting to bonk. So they eat. By the time they bonk, they don't realize that, their race is pretty much already over, or they've destroyed their time. And then they eat and eat to get themselves into the race or into the run. And then in the run, you don't feel like eating that much, so you don't. But you didn't eat enough earlier in the race, so you have to eat more in the run. And you either eat more and turn it into a walk, or you don't eat more and just basically
full of hot.
So it's a classic scenario. So best case scenario is you stuff your face early in the bike because you shouldn't be going that hard anyways. So, I'll eat sometimes 450 calories an hour early in the bike. And as you're getting closer and closer to getting off the bike for a run, you start to taper off that calorie intake because you're not going to want to digest a lot of food as you're on the run. If you're eating a lot early in the bike, like if we're talking about like Ironman, for example, you're going to be eating a lot for the first, if you're planning on like a 6 hour bike, for 5 hours of that bike ride, you're eating a lot. For the last hour, you might taper off that fuel intake a little bit, but it's really those 5 hours of just shoving food down the hatch on the bike that are going to get you through the run. And then the run, you can get away with, like if you're a girl, you can eat right around 200 calories an hour. A guy, you can do closer to 250 to 300 an hour. And you can keep that in during the run. And that's a great scenario versus not eating early, not eating often. Sprint triathlon, you don't really need to eat at all, honestly. Yep. Olympic triathlon, it would benefit you. You don't need to eat quite as much on the bike, but you can do most of your fueling on the bike for an Olympic distance and then just maybe have a gel during the 10K. And then half Ironman is pretty similar to Ironman. Eat a lot early in the bike, That's the best time to eat. As far as caffeine is concerned.
Well, just before we get on to the caffeine, is there a danger of overeating, in the Ironman or in the half Ironman?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, it's less of a danger on the bike because you're only moving your legs. So your upper body doesn't need all this blood flow. And there's a lot more left for the stomach to digest food.
Okay, cool.
So, yeah, the more the danger is overeating on the run. On the bike, you want to err more on the side of eating too much and just practice it in your training before the race, how much you can get away with. I think Chrissy Wellington does something crazy, like close to 500 an hour on the bike, which is a lot for a woman. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Cool. Okay, and then caffeine. What do you think about that?
Caffeine, I, first of all, sometimes can't survive without. Happen to have only decaf in the house right now, so I'm sure we'd have a much better interview right now if I'd have had my morning cup of piping hot caffeinated coffee. But you need to be careful with it. You know, I'll have a cup of coffee a day, a cup of caffeinated coffee a day to keep my adrenal glands from overworking and also to keep my body really sensitive to the performance-enhancing benefits of caffeine on race day. So anywhere from 7 to 10 days before the race, I'll switch to decaf or totally cut out caffeine. And then on race morning, I will start caffeine about 30 to 45 minutes prior to the race and keep it coming in, usually from gels, the entire race, because caffeine does reduce your rating of perceived exertion or perceived pain. It can help you with your utilization of fatty acids as a fuel. And it can keep you very alert and very motivated and very hungry to keep going. And on longer days, you know, when if you're doing a 15-hour Ironman, it can kind of keep you awake as you're in the marathon. So I am definitely a proponent of caffeine. You just need to make sure you don't use too much. You know, in Ironman, I find that people tend to start to have some digestive issues once they exceed about 100 milligrams an hour. So just be careful.
Okay, cool. And then just switching to general nutrition, you've touched on it previously about trying to have less carbohydrates in the diet and becoming more efficient with our body. Do you have any recommendations for maybe a good breakfast or something that will help people feel like they're quite full and not feel they have to munch all the time?
Yeah, sure. You know, I've got a lot of different breakfasts in like over at the Timeless Training site. One of those books you have over there that has some good breakfasts in it as part of the triathlon program. But breakfast, when you're looking at it, primarily you want the base of breakfast to be fats and proteins, and then you add in some fiber-based carbohydrates. So, for example, breakfast for me will be a couple scoops of whey protein powder with some full-fat coconut milk. I put a little bit of cinnamon in there for flavor, and then add some almond butter for some added fats, and then finally finish that off with just a little bit of cooked oats and either blueberries or bananas. And I stir all that together in a bowl. And that'll keep you satiated. You know, for me, if I eat that at 6 a.m., I'm fine until about 1:30 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So, breakfast, you should eat enough to get you relatively full. And it should have a wide range of nutrients in it early in the day to keep you going through the day. And it should have a lot of fats and proteins in it and enough carbs to pick you up and fill up your carbohydrate stores in the morning. And if you've got a real heavy training day, you can add in a little bit more carbohydrate than that. Like on a heavy training day, you know, something like a couple of sweet potatoes with one or two fried eggs would be a little bit more fitting scenario for like a harder training day.
Yeah. And do you recommend fasting at all? Is there any benefit in fasting?
Yeah, there is definitely. If you are, wanting to train your body to become more efficient at burning fat, fasting is very good for that. Doing like an overnight fast where you're stopping your consumption of food at say 7 p.m. and not eating anything until about 10 a.m. the next morning, and maybe getting in an exercise session around 8 a.m. in the morning. That can really be helpful in burning fat. And also there are certain genes that can cause to affect the what are called the telomeres in your DNA. And right. Essentially, it can have an anti-aging or a life lengthening benefit to include a practice like that in your routine.
Yeah, it seems to be something which you find in a lot of cultures, and so it's an interesting question to see how it ties up with science too.
Yeah, I think that it's something that athletes really miss out on the benefits of. Like, if I wasn't an athlete and wasn't exercising so much and kind of adhering to the consistency protocol we talked about earlier, I'd probably do at least a weekend fast at least once a month. And it's probably something that, you know, when I maybe get into my old age and train a little bit less, I'll probably start to do just to help my body break down a little less quickly.
Yeah, and for somebody that's looking to lose weight, is there anything that they need to specifically do, or is it just the consistent training and the type of diet you talked about?
Consistent training, the type of diet I talked about, and you know, if you're trying everything and it's not working, then you would definitely need to look into getting a hormonal analysis and assessing whether or not your hormones are actually balanced properly.
Cool. Oh, that's great. Ben, I think we've covered most of the questions. I might not have got some of the really specific ones, but I think we've really touched on all of the questions that people have come across with in general.
Fantastic.
And yeah, and we were talking earlier that that we'd like to, you know, that you were going to offer us something special for our subscribers that, you know, find out about your Triathlon Dominator. So maybe could you just tell us a bit about the Triathlon Dominator? Because we've talked a lot about different aspects of training, and in particular Ironman. And I know that a lot of our subscribers are interested in training for the Ironman, and they've read some of your articles that I've sent out to them explaining a bit about the Triathlon Dominator. But maybe you could just summarize it a little bit, and then we can tell them what special deal we have available for them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you've heard me to refer to a triathlon training program a few times during this talk, and you know, that's the Dominator program that I'm referring to. And you know, when a few years ago I looked around the triathlon training programs out there, I found that they A, were causing people to train too much, and B, were not giving really sound nutritional advice. And so I not only wanted to give people this plan that addressed those issues, but also kind of cover a lot of the little things. Like, the most perfect plan will get you up to race day, but then it's kind of like, what do you do during the race? And so the program really focuses on providing you with some audios and discussions with me about how to actually execute properly on race day, because that, you know, the plan will get your body perfectly prepared for the race, but your mind has to know what to do during the race. And so that's a big part of the program as well. So it's a collection of different audios and books that cover everything from your strength training, lay out your entire protocol from point A to point B. It's a 36 weeks training protocol for Ironman that can be adapted for half Ironman. Gives you a nutrition meal plan called Holistic Fueling, which is based off some of the nutritional philosophies we talked about today, and goes into your strength training protocol, as well as all of the things that you should be doing both in the weeks and the days leading up to the race, as well as the actual race day execution itself.
Cool. Yeah, no, it's a great program, and I think one of the things I like about it is it ties in completely with the philosophy that I've got on Timeless Triathlon, of being very efficient with the time training. It's not doing useless junk miles, but it's doing work that's going to make a difference on race day.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. So you wanted to go over a bonus that I'm going to give to the people listening in on this call, right?
Yeah, so, well, first of all, I'll thank you, Ben, for providing that. That's very generous of you to offer that.
No problem at all. And, you know, if people forward me their receipt and reference where you heard about the Triathlon Dominator, I will send you for free an extra package. Basically, for the athletes who I privately coach, I've got this 85-plus page document of nutrition tips and tricks that I've kind of amassed over the past several years. And, it's normally a password protected, private athlete only access document. But if you shoot me a receipt for the Triathlon Dominator, I will go ahead and reply with the private link to that document for you to download for free. So I will also include that.
Yeah, that's great, Ben. Is there a time limit on that special bonus?
I would need to receive that within at least 30 days after they hear this message. So.
Okay, great. Well, that's really great, because when we first talked to you, you know, we're thinking that maybe it'll just be a 24-hour bonus, but you've just extended it a little bit longer, which is really great. It gives time people a chance to, you know, have a listen to this call and see that you know what you're talking about. And, you know, I'm sure that once they hear it, they'll be really keen to get that extra bonus from you.
Yeah, exactly. All you got to do is email. And the email address that you would want to email is the one that you will find. You actually get my personal email address when you get that Triathlon Dominator package. It's included to be able to ask me questions. And so just email that email address and I'll hook you up.
Okay, that's awesome. So I'll just recap the address where you can find the Triathlon Dominator. It's timelesstriathlon.com/go/dominator.php. And once you've got that program, then send your receipt to Ben. Then he'll give you that special top secret ninja nutrition guide that he's got available just for the next 30 days. So thanks a lot, Ben. I really appreciate it. We talked a bit longer than we were planning, but it was really great stuff. I really enjoyed it, and I'm sure our listeners will really appreciate it as well.
Awesome. All right.
And thank you for your special that special offer. I think we're going to hear a lot of thanks for that as well.
All right. Thanks for sending.
All right. Well, have a good one, Ben. And I hope that that arm of yours gets better. And, you know, I hope that you're feeling better and get off those drugs quickly.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Okay. Goodbye.